I mean, I'm sure you come across many challenges in your day-to-day work, as we all do. How do you overcome challenges?
I tend to start by assuming that something can be fixed, probably.
Oh, I love that. That's such a positive way to go into anything.
My name's Esprit Devora, host of the Women in Tech Show. The show means a lot to me. The reason why I wanted to create the Women in Tech Show is I wanted to create a positive piece of content, something where people can listen and say, if she can do it, so can I. I call it actionable empowerment. Every single episode, you'll hear the story of a fantastic woman in tech, from engineers to founders to investors to journalists to designers, all sorts of different females in tech who have thrived. I want to share their stories with you so that you can know what resources, mentors, and life situations they accessed in order to get to where they are today. Enjoy.
Welcome back to the Women in Tech podcast. You are going to hear me completely elated. I just landed in Edinburgh, Scotland, and went straight to IBM to talk to an amazing woman in tech named Sharon. I am so grateful to Suzanne Lee connecting us via Twitter. And now I get to sit in this really, really cool office overlooking the castle and getting to talk to an inspiring woman. Hi.
Hi.
Go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your background in technology.
Okay, so my name's Sharon Moore, and I'm IBM's industry technical leader for travel and transportation in the UK, which is one of the world's longest job titles. It essentially means that I'm an architect. I tend to sit and work at the strategy level, and I work in a business development capacity, so looking to work with our clients to design technical solutions that will help them do travel and transportation better.
If you don't mind me asking, what exactly does IBM have to do with like travel and transportation specific? What does that mean to me as a person? Does it mean anything, or is it more something else?
So it is looking at the technologies that we have or the technologies that our partners have and how they can work together to help our travel and transportation clients do their job better. So it could be helping them run railways more effectively. It could be helping them give passengers a much more personal experience.
Right.
That sort of thing.
Very cool. I was telling Sharon when I got here that I'm particularly excited about being even doing an interview with anyone from IBM, because my first computers were my dad would get me an IBM ThinkPad. And that was my immersion into the tech world, is having these laptops. And I remember I had this little red like mouse that was a button in the middle, and my finger would like move it. And now we have the touch pads and stuff like that. But like, do the ThinkPads still have the little?
So ThinkPads do still have the track point. They were also given other nicknames, but officially I think it's called the track point. But we sold that business back in 2000.
I'm only 19.
To Lenovo. So we haven't been in the PC market for years and years and years, but people still remember us that way. In Scotland, we have that, shall we say, that challenge, because we had a big manufacturing plant in one of our cities, and therefore people still remember us as making those. But it's been a wee while now, unfortunately.
Tell me, where did you get your start in technology?
I mentioned when I was talking about my job title that I'm an architect. Actually, when I was little, I wanted to be an architect who designed buildings and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I ended up with a little bit of work experience in our secondary school. And I worked in an architect, and we had this thing called computer-aided design. And I decided that computers were really quite cool, and maybe I should do that instead. So I ended up focusing on computing from the age of about 14, 15, something
wow.
like that. Unlike you, we didn't have computer games or anything like that at home. I'm probably a little bit older, but we didn't have any of that kind of thing. Didn't have that influence in my family at all. It was just something that seemed like a really interesting subject. I loved programming and making things work and solving problems when it didn't work and that kind of thing. It started from a desire not to be in technology at all, actually. But it kind of moved on from there.
How did you go from becoming interested in computing at 14 to starting to develop a career in computing? Like, where did your career start?
Did the computing science, mathsy type stuff that was really useful at school, went to university and studied software engineering. And
so cool.
Part of the reason I ended up working for IBM is I went along to a careers fair, like, you know, where all the companies
really?
come, and I basically went along to find out how many goodies I could get from all the different companies exhibiting, yeah. you know, the frisbees and the bouncy totally. Balls and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I met this woman at the IBM stand who was so passionate. She just joined the graduate yeah. scheme and was having a great training yeah. experience. And I thought, ooh, that sounds like fun. So I pretty much only applied for IBM and ended up working for the company.
Wait, so. Get out. You've been... no, does that still exist?
yeah,
you've been working for IBM like pretty much your whole career.
Pretty much.
That's really
yeah.
rare.
So yeah, it is now.
And you know what I heard also is that you met a woman in tech.
Yeah.
Who like, do you know anything about her at
no,
all?
Couldn't
no,
tell you her name. Her couldn't tell. I remember what she looks like, and that's about it. But yeah, she was just so passionate about learning and all the opportunities. And I think that one of the things. So yeah, it is rare for somebody to have worked for a company for so long these days.
In any country.
But if you look, yeah. yeah, exactly. But if you look at the things that I've done, I've worked in three different businesses because I've worked in our outsourcing business, I've worked in our consulting business, I've worked in our sales business, and I've worked with lots of different clients and in a number of different industries. So I've had lots and lots of different opportunities that have made everything really exciting. But have also stayed in a company that is really pretty cool and trying to lead the way in technology.
It's so cool. I would love, so many people come to me. So the Women in Tech podcast is a solution-based podcast. Mm. Like, I really love the idea of delivering like a positive perspective to look at things. And so many people come to me and say, it's really hard to work in a big corporation as a woman in tech because they're the minority and they have to become more of a guy in their role in order to fit in and all this stuff. Is there something that you could share more about what your experience has been in being someone very passionate about technology and working for a respectable corporation?
I hope I've never had to become like a guy. Now, to be fair...
By the way, she looks beautiful, so she does not look like a guy at all.
There are probably some interests I share that might make it easy for me to converse with some of my male colleagues. So mm-hmm. I quite like rugby and cricket, which might be more of a UK thing, certainly than the US, and, you know, golf. And you know, so I will follow a number of these sports, which means I can chat about these things. But, you know, I love my shoes and I love my handbags. And I don't think we should be changing who we are as individuals. There are, you know, at a more serious level than shoes and handbags, you know, the qualities that women bring. If the whole point of diversity is that we all bring different things to mm-hmm. to the mix. So if we all suddenly became men, well, that's not very diverse, is it?
100%. You know,
so I think it's really important that we remain authentic. I think if you're not authentic, then people will spot it and will feel that there's some kind of falseness there, and they won't necessarily know what it is.
Totally.
But they'll probably not trust you, which will and potentially... end up going against what it is that you're trying to do. So I would say do remain conscious of who you are. There may be some scenarios where you have to think about what is the guy thinking here, and you know, is there a way that I can help him work with me?
Right.
But by that, I don't necessarily mean change who I am. It's just about understanding that different people work in different ways.
And I'm sure you'd say the exact same statement if it was like, what is this girl thinking here and how can she best work with me?
Absolutely.
It's just a human statement.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Definitely feel free to challenge me if you don't agree with what I'm about to say. But I've always felt, and you guys, if I piss you off, I am sorry, but I've always felt that business is a language in itself. Mm-hmm. Like if you go to Japan, you speak Japanese, and you know, in other countries you speak English, in other countries you speak Spanish, and in business you speak business. Mm-hmm. And I think the language of business is a bit of a stronger language that is associated with a masculine air, but I don't think that's a guy thing. I just really, that's just my own opinion. Do you agree or disagree? Please feel free to have a different viewpoint.
So I guess my observation would be because more men have been in business, it will probably have adopted the customs and language and terminology that might be more masculine. And that doesn't mean that that can't change. And if, you know, women become less of a minority and there's more equity, then the language will change to include everybody's types of language.
Do you think it needs to change? I'm genuinely curious.
That's a really good point. I think if you look at the, without getting too boring here, if you look at the statistics around about economy and financial success and that kind of thing, diversity increases those things. And therefore, I think the language probably does need to change in some ways. Even as simple things like adverts. Some adverts are not appealing to women and men. And I know that's not quite what you were getting at, but there is a probably a language thing there that we are just unconscious of. Then the problem is a lot of this is unconscious bias. Not all of us really encounter proper conscious bias and sexism, but there will be some unconscious stuff on there. And just as the way that we women don't always necessarily understand how a man's thinking, likewise, you won't necessarily understand what we're thinking.
There's so many books written about it. I mean, one of my favorite things about what I perceive to be the language of business is part of the characteristics of the language of business, in my perception, is being resourceful. Mm-hmm. I think when you understand business, you understand how to be more resourceful. And so there's so many things, and that could be either masculine or feminine or however you want to see it. But I definitely think that it's a language, and I'm always intrigued. I guess you bring it back. I've been in conversations with a bunch of women talking about, you know, how to encourage more women to be in tech. And they'll say, well, in schools, the girls should don't feel comfortable with the guys. Mm. So then they should have like a different setup so that they could feel more comfortable. And I actually disagree, because you're sheltering someone and like protecting them from, I don't like the word protecting. You're creating a false reality, and then they're going to go into the world, and that protection is, or false protection isn't going to exist. Mm. Do you, if you don't mind me asking, I'm with knowing you so little, I'm already so inspired by you. So I just like want to learn from you. You know what I mean? And think about like, maybe I need to open the way I see the world or whatever. Do you agree or disagree with that?
I'm conflicted on that one. No. I say that because there may be evidence that some private schooling, public schooling, whatever you call it, the schools where your parents are likely to pay for you, there happen to be a number of what's the word I'm looking for? Gender-specific schools, girls' schools and boys' schools.
Yeah.
And in those, the girls can be much more confident in doing things. But that's not, wouldn't just be computing. That would be maths or physics or whatever, just because there are no boys there. But that kind, it depends on whether the unconscious bias is coming through from the teacher or something like that. And it might come from parents. Like I said, I went to co-ed school, and there was girls and boys, and it didn't really put me off. I remember once getting asked if I would go and speak to some schoolgirls about what it was like to be in IT and real jobs and all that kind of thing. And they wanted me to speak to the girls because they wanted me to be a role model. And much as I think that's a great idea, I asked if the boys could be in the classroom too, because I want them to see that women have leadership roles as well. Because if they're set with the expectations that women have to work harder and need more support, there's a likelihood that they're going to carry on with those rather than and change them.
100%.
So where possible, I'd like to have everyone together. But don't get me wrong, I think they still have a need for women's groups and that kind of thing. In addition, I think.
Do you do many speaking engagements?
I've done some. I tend to do more on my day job than in women in tech, only because I run a number of women in tech things, and to put yourself as speaker is a little bit arrogant, really.
Well, no, I've spoken at
a few.
My motive for asking is I find you really inspiring, and especially I find you to be the answer to the challenge presented in private discussions of like, oh, you know, corporations don't really encourage women to have leadership roles and et cetera, so forth. And here you are, like one of the few people in the world that's stayed with the same company for so long in tech. And I think that's inspiring. I think as many people should see you as an example of a positive.
Thank you.
Yeah.
There are probably quite a few organizations that are trying to help their women become leaders, or trying to make it acceptable that women are leaders. I mean, if you look at IBM, Ginni Rometty, she started out as a systems engineer a technical person, a technician, right back at the start of her career, and she may be quite successful as a CEO. So, you know, you can look around and there are definitely examples of large corporates where there are women in leadership roles. I don't know how true that is of some smaller organisations where potentially it's more difficult to get to the top if there's only a few of you, but
right.
just because I haven't got experience of those.
People who aren't familiar with Jenny, can you spell her name so people could Google stalk her?
Yeah, so Jenny is G-I-N-N-Y, Jenny or Virginia Rometty. And yes, she's the CEO and chairman of IBM. So she's been quite successful.
So you, girls, look her up so you have more examples of what's going on. Girls and guys. It's not just girls listening, but... But I specifically want people to see that there's, it's always in the private conversation. There's not enough women in leadership roles, you know? It's just always there.
What's really interesting is I think there are. I just don't know how many of them get out there and become visible.
Yeah.
Which is why I asked you to do speaking opportunities.
because I think you should be out there everywhere. But bringing it back to exactly you, which is just awesome. You're just everything awesome. How did you become intrigued in travel and tourism? Like, where did that transition flow? Because you had three different roles that you were interested in, or three different topics.
Yeah, so I've worked in three different parts of the business and had a number of different jobs within those. I'll start maybe at the beginning, if that's
all
right.
Yeah, but no, please do, because I'd like to hear how you became interested in each one and how you've been kind of navigating your way, yeah.
So the outsourcing job or jobs, I started in outsourcing because that's where there was a role in IBM and I thought I'd give it a go. If I'm honest, it wasn't the most exciting of roles. Wasn't particularly challenging. It wasn't technical,
right.
But that's not necessarily why it wasn't challenging. It just didn't really interest me. But I had a lot of time, which meant I looked into what are the other possibilities.
Right.
And architecture was something I thought, oh, I kind of like the idea of that. It's sort of a bit like what I did in my degree, but
totally.
Bigger picture. I like drawing pictures. That's always a good thing. I like kind of knowing how everything works. I don't need to know every bit of detail, but just overall, what's kind of the picture. But the more I was in outsourcing, the more I realized I'm more an applications person rather than what it runs on, what the platform is. And that's why I moved into our consulting business, because that's where we get to do an awful lot of that kind of stuff. And I moved from one project to another, just getting more and more experience, becoming more of a leader as an architect. And I would always pick jobs or roles that were an interesting problem, would be something that I have done a bit of before, but probably had an opportunity to learn something else. I tend to be one of these people that kind of goes, okay, I haven't done everything, but I know I've got the ability to learn, so I'm just going to go for it. And
right.
I don't think enough people question themselves. I think there's too many people who just want to know everything before they give it a try, and you're never going to get very far if you do that.
Yeah.
And then I moved into our sales organization because in our consulting business, the solution had already been sold to our clients, and then it was up to me to put more detail in it so somebody else could then do the development. And I kind of wanted to be upfront having those initial influencing conversations where we were really deciding what the problem was and how we could fix it. So that's why I moved into sales. And I did a couple of years working in what we called digital engagement, which was all about using social and commerce and some cool technologies to give us as users much better experiences. And then IBM decided to align more towards industry.
Mm-hmm.
And travel and transportation is, it's an industry that's so fascinating. It's got so many problems, so many problems. And we probably think that already as passengers and travelers, and I already had done a lot of traveling. So I kind of felt I was quite familiar with the industry. Turns out, not so much. There is so much goes on behind the scenes that I just had no awareness of. So it's really, really, really fascinating. So that's where I am now. Let's see where the future takes me. But it's just, there are, like I said, so many problems that can be solved or helped by technology, especially, you know, for those of us who carry our phones everywhere. There are so many things that travel organizations could be doing to make our lives a lot better.
100%.
They're just not particularly joined up.
And they've
had a complete lack of investment because of economy and financial pressures, that kind of thing. So, yeah, lots to solve. And I'm a problem solver.
I mean, I'm sure you come across many challenges in your day-to-day work, as we all do. How do you overcome challenges?
Oh, that's a really good question, a really hard one. I don't think I've ever really thought about what the process is before. I tend to start by assuming that something can be fixed, probably.
Oh, I love that. That's such a positive way to go into anything.
I hope that's true. I think that's true.
God, I love that.
There's got to be a fix for everything, really. And what would then, I don't, do you know, I've really not thought about the process of coming across challenges.
But I mean, I like that approach right there.
I guess there you have to balance that with you on your, as an individual, can't fix everything on your own. Mm-hmm. There's not enough time for that, not enough energy, and not everyone has all the right skills either. But yeah, start with just assuming that the challenge can be fixed or approached, or and then just set to it. I really haven't thought it through at all.
No, I love it. I love that, going into any challenge, even if there isn't a way to fix it, just even coming at the approach with assuming that there is a way, it opens up your mind, because if there is, you'll find it with that kind of approach. One thing that I've kind of taken away from talking to you, and I hope I'm right, is I really feel you're a person who invents your reality. Like, I feel that you're creating your life. And the reason why I think it's so important with you specifically in creating your life is because, you know, jobs have, like, in the entrepreneurial world, have a bad rap. They're like, oh, you know, that person has a job. And I'm like, what? My girlfriend works at Disney, like in, you know, the finance department of Disney, and she like loves her job, you know? Not everyone needs to be an entrepreneur or a founder and any of this stuff. And on top of that, it's an extraordinarily hard life to be those things. And more times than not, it doesn't work and you totally fail. And I love it when people are just living a life that they feel fulfilled by. Whatever that may be, as long as it's led with heart in a good place. And hearing you speak, it obviously, we don't know each other well, but it seems like you genuinely love your job. And it seems like you're entrepreneurial in your job. And it seems like you're inventing your life. Would you say that's pretty spot on?
And so I think that's probably fairly true. And, you know, you work for a large organization like IBM, and some things are going to be done to you. You know, there's projects are going to cancel. And actually, that's true of anything, not just a large company like IBM. But projects are going to cancel, or we're going to take a different direction and move from solution social to industry. It's all about how you react to that change, I think. One of our practices, we have a number of practices, 9 of them, and I can't recite them all, but one of them is restlessly reinventing. And I think that's something we need to, especially in the technology world. I was on a panel and somebody put forward the question round about the negativity of technology always changing and how do you keep up? And my response was, well, yeah, it can be hard to keep up, but how exciting does that make it, that life is going to be different day to day? And so, yeah, I think it's about how you choose to respond to situations. And if you're getting bored, create a new world. Don't stick with the one that you've got.
I love that. Awesome. Well, thank you so much again for hanging out with the Women in Tech podcast. If you want to connect with more incredible women in tech like Sharon, go to the Women in Tech Facebook group. You get there directly by womenintechvip.com. It takes you right there, so you don't have to mess around with all the characters. That's womenintechvip.com. And of course, if you ever want to say hi to me, it's at Women in Tech Show on Twitter or at Esprit Devora. You guys, I'll see you guys, talk to you guys, hear you guys in the next episode. Bye.
This episode of the Women in Tech Show is powered by UpGuard. UpGuard's discovery engine brings visibility to complex IT environments, enabling teams to quickly identify risk, confirm compliance, and make business safer. They are proud supporters and employers of incredible women in tech. To be notified every time a new Women in Tech episode is released, simply text Women in Tech to 310-872-2423. That's 310-872-2423. To support the Women in Tech Show, it's super easy. All you need to do is start doing your Amazon shopping by clicking on this link first, womenintechshow.com/Amazon. That's womenintechshow.com/Amazon. The Women in Tech Show is hosted by Esprit Devora, edited by MKW Films, show notes provided by Carl Marty, music by Jay Huffman Live. The Women in Tech Show is a WeAreTech.fm production.